You're listening to Labor News Radio, and my name is Glenn Lang. Labor News Radio is heard on over 20 radio stations around the world, as well as on Labor Start Radio on the Internet. It's distributed via the AINPOS Radio Project at radioforall.net and the Indie Media Project at radio.indymedia.org. It's also heard on KITR LP 101.5 in Kettle Falls, Washington. I want to thank everybody for listening, and thanks for your support.
To protect them from the view of the people wearing dirty rags and begging for their food, while they're serving up a banquet for the membership inside. The poor man on the bottom's contemplating suicide, 'cause he feels worthless. His hunger pains beyond belief. There's no relief. We're gonna bring back
of Coxey's Army by Eddie Starr, Steelworker. Thanks, Eddie, wherever you are. Cyrus Funk is the unluckiest person I've ever met. If he were to be hanged and the rope broke, he'd be struck by lightning before he hits ground. It was quite a long time ago. He took one of those low-wage non-union jobs and, of course, got himself into trouble economically right away. first off, there wasn't quite enough money to go around to make to pay all his bills. He got one of those credit cards with his 24% APR interest rates on it that damn near ruined him. And then, of course, his wife got sick, and they had medical bills that weren't covered. And he lost his car. So the next thing he knew, he was riding his bike back and forth to work. Well, he worked out in Kettle Falls, but he lived in Colville, about 9 miles away, down Highway 395, and he worked nights. He pedaled that bike back and forth to work, trying to get up enough money so he could buy a car, so he could drive to work again. One night he's going home. There wasn't any moon out. He's going out there across the Spanish Prairie on Highway 395, and he come up to this creek where there's cottonwoods growing along the banks, quite a lot of brush. All of a sudden, this skunk runs out in front of him, and he hits the skunk. Of course, the bicycle does an endo, and Cyrus lands on his head in the middle of the pavement, but he also lands on top of that skunk. And that skunk is biting him and carrying on, and then he stops everything and sprays him. Then he commences to bite and scratch and carry on again, and then spray him again. Finally, Cyrus manages to get up and get away from that skunk. But by that time, he's been sprayed in the face so many times, his eyes have swollen shut, and he can't see anything. Kind of wandered around in circles there in the highway until the cop comes to the deputy sheriff comes on his way back to Colville at the end of the shift, and winds up helping him get situated again, get his bike back together, and get his face wiped so he can go on. But that cop's not going to let Cyrus get in the back of that cop car the way he smells. Finally, he gets cleaned up, and he gets walking down the road, and he gets home. He opens the door, and his wife is standing there waiting for him, and she just slams the door and says, "You ain't coming in here like that." Pretty quick, she throws a blanket out the back, and he has to spend the night out in the backyard, and in the morning he has to bury his clothes and throw away the bike, and of course, shave his head damn near because his hair is all soaked with that stuff. And can't get the smell out. Can't get the smell out of him no matter how much he takes a shower. But there isn't much anybody can do about that except avoid him for the next few days. That's kind of a bad deal when all of that kind of bad luck happens to you. But, you know, the whole thing was completely avoidable. None of it would have ever happened if he did had a union card on him and been getting a family wage instead of a starvation wage, if he'd had benefits, union benefits, and if he'd have stayed away from those damn credit cards that'll ruin your life. He'd never wound up hitting that skunk in the first place. So what I want to know is, have you got your union card on you? Well, the big headline for this week is Donald Rumsfeld has extended the no-bid cost-plus contracts for Halliburton, Kibble Brown & Root, the Carlyle Group, and all the others that are cronies and business partners of this Bush administration, when he told everybody that it was going to take 8 to 12 more years to of fighting in Iraq to, well, not to defeat the insurgency. He said that military force can never defeat the insurgency. So 8 to 12 years just to keep getting those no-bid cost-plus contracts from our government. That must be That's about the only reason I can think of to keep waging that war on the Iraqi people over there. And then, of course, the president has his little speech to bolster the morale of the American people and help them to understand what's at stake in Iraq. And he points out that Iraq was connected to September 11th something like seven times in his speech. The media is saying it was something like five, but the amazing thing is that the media is actually standing up and saying, well, wait a minute. That's kind of a bogus claim, isn't it? And that's the first time that's happened in over 4 years now since September 11th happened. Well, in the almost 4 years since September 11th happened, that anybody in the major media has stood up and said, Mr. President, that's not exactly an accurate connection there that you're making. Of course, I think the reason that they're finally getting around to that now is because the poll numbers for Bush are so poor that they feel like they can get away with criticizing him a little bit and not lose their precious advertising. But don't get the idea this media has gone wild-eyed liberal on us and going to actually start criticizing the president and his policies. They're treating it like it was old news, and it's no big deal that they didn't bring up that contradiction before. But not covering the news in a timely fashion is not new for this corporate media that we live under. The media that the rest of the world looks at as Pravda, a government-owned or a government propaganda arm. The truth is, it's not a government propaganda arm; it's the corporate propaganda arm, and the government has become just another arm of the corporate power structure. At any rate, they're kind of slow on reporting things that really matter to the American people. And, of course, now there's getting to be a little bit more attention to a speech that Mario Cuomo gave back in Tuesday, January 2003, where Cuomo said he kicked off a speaking tour aimed at helping to revive Democrats for last year's election, for last year's election. Class warfare, he declared the war, Cuomo said at the National Press Club. He said, we're going to give all the money to the rich. Cuomo was pushing the Democratic Party to sharpen its differences with the Republicans on issues such as tax cuts, declared, we're not the ones who started the war, we're just defending ourselves against his attack. Now that's something that I've been saying for years, is that there's a class war, and of course, anytime you try to defend yourself, they accuse you of waging class war. In his speech on that Tuesday in January, Cuomo said that the 10-year, $1.3 trillion tax cut enacted in 2001 should be frozen until the federal budget runs in surplus again. That tax cut gives 52% of its benefit to the richest 1% of Americans by 2010. Those with an average income of $1.5 million, according to the labor-funded advocacy group Citizens for Tax Justice. Cuomo said the money earmarked for wealthy taxpayers should be used to cut taxes for working-class Americans who would buy goods and services produced by business, which in turn would boost corporate profits. It's not a lack of investors that's hurting the economy, Cuomo said. You need more consumers. At any rate, I wanted to point out that this information has been out there for quite a while, but when it's inconvenient, the corporate media has been just kind of ignoring it and looking for something better to talk about, like the Michael Jackson trial, maybe, or some other scandal in faraway places, not the scandal of how we're being robbed blind by this administration and their no-bid contracts. I want to talk a little bit about teamwork. You know, when you show up for work and you go into a meeting with your boss, he's always talking about teamwork. He wants you to be on the team. He wants you to be a team player. He wants the team to succeed. He's got a marketing team. He's got a research team. He's got a production team. He's got a motivational team. He's got all kinds of teams out there. He's got a legislative team to work with the governments. He's got a team to deal with government regulations. They're just one team after another. There's PR teams. God knows it never ends. But you know, the team that's always missing when your boss is talking about teamwork. The one team that's missing is the team that protects your rights and your benefits in the workplace. So there's something a little bit lacking in his concept of teamwork. And the idea that you need a little teamwork coming your way either never occurs to him, or if it occurs to him, it's something that he needs to worry about and prevent. Teamwork to him means give. Give him your time, give him your talent, give him your energy, give him your body in the case of dangerous industries. Give him everything that you've got. Give him 12 hours a day anymore. And what he'll give you back is a wage that you can live on if your wife is working and your two oldest children are working. Then you can make ends meet with what he's willing to pay you. And he'll give you as few benefits as possible, the minimum that he can get away with, and still keep employees on the payroll. So what you're really doing when you show up for work is you're working for team give, or better yet, you're working for team take everything that you've got. So in order to balance things a little bit, worker's got to go out there and find the team that's going to work for him when it comes to protecting his job. When it comes to protecting his wages, giving him some kind of income security, and protecting his benefits, making sure that he's got health care and dental care and some kind of a retirement plan so that he doesn't have to live on cat food and dog food when he's old or she's old and can't work anymore. It's those kind of things that... The America used to be proud to provide, and anymore, if a company's willing to provide that, then they're suckers and they're losers and they're out of step with reality and with the modern corporate culture. So now more than ever, you need a team on your side. And that team is of course your union. When you bring up union to your team leader at work, he'll give you that same old story, you know, about how you don't need that team here. That team just means that you can't talk to your boss and settle issues individually. The boss can't just give you a raise out of the kindness of his heart because he thinks you're doing an extra special job and leave the rest of the workers behind. That sort of thing. But the truth is that all of that is the line that the Chamber of Commerce tells employers to use as being the most effective way to prevent that employees team from ever getting on the premises. You know, we can go a little bit farther with this teamwork thing. Up in Quebec, when the workers managed to get a Walmart store organized, the Walmart shut down that store rather than deal with the union. And when you're as huge as Walmart, you can get away with that sort of thing, and you know, one store here and there is not gonna have much impact, as sadly people will drive to the next Walmart if they need to in order to buy their sweatshop junk, all the sweatshop junk that Walmart sells. But the with a little bit of teamwork and a little bit of effort, the people who are trying to organize Walmart can contact the, I'd recommend that they contact the Longshoremen's Union, either the ILWU or the IOU, because those people understand what teamwork is about. They understand what solidarity is about. The longshoremen in this country are the best paid blue-collar workers in the world, and they've done it strictly by solidarity. They understand that if they stick together, they keep their jobs and they keep their wages and they keep their benefits. And a longshoreman, on just his income, can put his children through college if he wants to. There's not many jobs that you can say that about anymore that are blue-collar. Back in the 50s, you could say that about a lot of jobs, but not anymore. So when you talk teamwork and when you talk solidarity, if you go talk to the ILWU or the IOU and you say we're trying to form a union at Walmart, and Walmart keeps defeating us at every turn, and then you propose a program where the ILWU or the IOU refuses to unload anything off of a ship that's destined for any Walmart store in North America. And if that happens pretty quick, the ships are stuck in the harbor full of Walmart goods that they can't get off. And of course the ships that don't have any on aren't going to load anymore. And when that happens, then Walmart is shut down, because virtually everything in that store is made overseas, either in Bangladesh or China or some other place where wages are either extremely low, or it's slave labor where wages are extremely non-existent. There has to be some way for unions to get together and start playing teamwork amongst themselves in order to do this, because if we aren't able to get Walmart organized and some of these other big conglomerates that are turning our country into a minimum wage world, it's going to be minimum wages for a lot of us before it's done. There's a lot of unions out there that are itching for that fight. The textile workers and others who'd love to have that fight with Walmart and with the other retail giants that keep buying non-union sweatshop products to retail, to American people that are more than happy to go out and buy it because it's cheap, and never once consider that they're digging their own grave by buying that stuff. One of the things that Robert Rice used to say was, "When you're in a hole, stop digging." But we can't get get consumers to do that. So we need to start building unity amongst the unions, so that we can have a little teamwork on the docks, a little teamwork in the truck yards and elsewhere, so that Walmart can't get the low-wage non-union stuff to fill their shelves with. And then maybe they'll, once they are starved out a little bit, they'll decide that maybe they can live with a union, and maybe they aren't the world's biggest and baddest bully. Another campaign that needs to be waged on Walmart is to get municipalities and counties and states to pass ordinances that like they did in Maryland, where if you have more than so many employees, you have to provide health care for all of your workers, whether they're full-time or part-time. Have to start in implementing fines so that large employers who don't provide benefits and because of that policy winds up costing the state or the community money, that the fine is big enough so that it's cheaper to provide the benefits than it is to pay the fine. That kind of legislation will do one of two things. It'll either keep Walmart out, which ain't a bad thing, or it'll make Walmart act like a responsible citizen instead of like Marie Antoinette, who says, let me cake. The one thing you got to remember, when your boss is up there touting the benefits of teamwork, he's absolutely right. But a worker with any sense has to be paying attention to what team he wants to belong to and what team he wants to make sacrifices for. And the team that he's willing to make sacrifices for ought to be the team that's willing to make sacrifices for him. Because any teamwork that isn't a two-way street isn't teamwork at all. It's just exploitation. Going back to the start of the program, Mr. Cyrus Funk would have been much better off had he given up the idea that he can make it on his own. Of course, that idea that you can make it on your own is sold daily by the boss at work. That anybody who can't stand up on their own two feet and take care of their own problems is has got a personal problem of some kind, which is a lie, but it's a handy lie that keeps unions out of places where unions are desperately needed. And it helps to make workers feel small and helpless and inadequate and pliable and exploitable to continually say, well, geez, if you were just a little bit tougher, if you were just a little bit smarter, if you were just a little bit cooler, if you're just a little bit more important, people would pay attention to you and you wouldn't have these problems. It's Wall Street in the workplace. I'm sorry, it's Madison Avenue in the workplace. Because Madison Avenue sells people the same self-image that you're small, unimportant, and weak unless you buy what we're selling hook, line, and sinker.
You've been listening to Labor News Radio with Glenn Lang. I want to urge everybody to support their local radio station, to support the AINPOS radio project at radioforall.net, support the Indie Media radio project at radio.indiemedia.org, and support KITR in Kettle Falls, Washington. You can do that by sending a check to P.O. Box 456, Kettle Falls, 99141. Make it payable to KITR Radio. Want to thank everybody for listening and thanks for your support. Labor News Radio is solely responsible for the content of this program. You can email us with your comments and questions at glennwobbly@mailcan.com. That's GLENNWOBBLIE at mailcan.com. Our website is glennwobbly.mailcan.com.